Mr. Ben Winter, thanks for coming on the podcast today. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Good. I'm excited to talk to you today. You have a very interesting book that you've published that we're going to talk about today. It's all about having and managing and understanding expectations and, you know, how that impacts our lives and what it means for us and how we set ourselves up for, you know, like success or for failure or for a world of pain or a world of joy, depending on how we choose to interpret and navigate the world, right? And it was a very good book. I read it and there were a lot of points that I really resonated with. And so I'm looking forward to getting to speak with you today. So thanks for coming on. Perhaps let's start off with just an easy intro. How did you get into this area? Like, what made you write about expectations?
It's been a very long journey, but it started out with a lot of personal growth work, and then I started doing improv, and then I started teaching improv, and during the process of teaching improv, I kept coming across this saying that the only reason anybody gets upset is because an expectation hasn't been met. And I was like, cool, I've got like a saying, a thing, like, right? And but it doesn't solve any problems. Like, it's true. It's something that holds true every which way I look at it. But it didn't solve any problems. And so I finally just kind of came to the conclusion that, like, hey, I need to sit down and, you know, maybe solve this problem for people. If not for anybody else, but for myself. And so I took that moment in time of being upset and I kind of put it at the top of a flowchart and said, okay, you know, if I'm upset, what do I do? And just sort of made this flowchart. And then as that was kind of coming to completion, I kept seeing all these like deep, dark areas that went unexplained. So, you know, for example, if you don't share your expectation, why not? You know, there's a lot of fear behind sharing expectations sometimes. And so I felt like I needed to write the book after the workflow. So that's kind of the... It feels almost backwards from where it was, yeah. Where a lot of people go, but I found the problem and then I decided to solve it for myself and for those around me. So
no, that's great. And I think you did an excellent job of it because, you know, expectations are a very weird thing in terms of how we see the world. And, you know, when we move through life and we navigate through the world, we have, you know, if you're paying attention to how you're perceiving and making sense of things, then you automatically will notice, you're like, oh, well, I move through the world going, oh, I expect this to happen, I expect that to happen, and they might be good expectations, as in like positive or have some benefit for you, or they might be negative and bad expectations where you're like, this is gonna suck, how else could it go, you know, like fuck this or whatever it is. And it's like there's a lot of things that go into it. And then when, you know, life meets you with a response and it either is in accordance with your expectation or more often than not in accordance with your expectation, it's very upsetting. And then, you know, you don't know what to do with it, right? Because you either blame the world, as in the world's not meeting your expectations, or you blame other people and you're like, it's other people's fault, or you blame yourself and you're like, oh, well, it's my fault or whatever it is. And none of those really seem to help much, right? They just make you feel worse, or it gives some sense of meaning to the upset, but it doesn't really do anything, right? And so it was a lot of this process that you were working through, like trying to resolve those kinds of issues for yourself. Was that right? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean, everything you just said is dead on, because, you know, if anybody just takes a moment and looks back at a time when they were upset, it could be something stupid, like stubbing your toe on the corner of your bed. You know, nobody wakes up expecting to stub their toe. You know, you kind of wake up expecting to walk down the hall, go to the bathroom, you know, go through your day without hurting yourself. Like, it's kind of one of those expectations we don't think about until it goes unmet. And then, you know, we stub our toe, we get upset. And then, oh, my day is going to go like crap. Well, you're kind of setting an expectation that your day is going to go like crap at that point. And so it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy at that point.
Right.
But that's a whole different subject all in itself. But, you know, it can be something that simple. And, you know, at that point, we can't really blame anybody around us because the bed, you know, it didn't move. We just woke up kind of slightly off of our normal routine. But, yeah, it can be really big, too, where we start blaming the people around us, the world around us for all the problems that we have. And it's never anybody else's fault. It's our own. So it's a very interesting subject to dive into. That's for sure.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, I like that example of stubbing your toe because, you know, I can think of so many different ways that someone might interpret that situation where, you know, you stub your toe and then you're like, who the fuck moved the bed? And, you know, you immediately go into like a blaming mode. Or you're like, this is bullshit. I always do this. You know, I suck. Or why can't I get it together and function like a normal human and just walk straight? Or, you know, this is because I'm so tired and stressed and or whatever it is. And I mean, I guess they may or may not be true, right? Like they may have some reflection on reality, but ultimately it doesn't really help or do anything for the situation because, well, the fact of the matter is, well, you stubbed your toe and it hurt. And now you got to deal with it, right? And you got to figure it out. And so that navigating that expectations of like, and I guess in some sense, it's very much an expectation of like, this shouldn't be happening, right? And I think that that's one that comes up a lot, at least for me, is that sense of like, why is this happening? This shouldn't be happening, whether it's stubbing your toe or something not going the way you wanted. And it can be very upsetting and it can last a long time, you know, like you can wake up. I mean, you can stub your toe, go to the bathroom, come back to sleep and wake up and then, you know, sleep for a few hours. And then the whole next day, you're like, I stubbed my toe this morning. I'm having the worst day ever. Right. And it can just ruin your whole day. And it doesn't have to. But I mean, it does and it can. Right. And so where do you sort of take people for that first step in terms of being able to recognize what kind of expectations we have?
So expectations are a very weird thing. So most of the time we don't even know we had the expectation until it's going unmet. So the stubbing toe, for example, like we don't know that we have the expectation of not stubbing our toe until we stub it. You know, it's one of those things where we just expect the day to go without hitting our toe on something. We expect to be able to use a fork without stabbing ourselves in the face when we're eating. Like, there's very simple things that we just expect to happen on a regular basis that we don't even think about. We expect to be able to walk. We expect to be able to tie our shoes without thinking about it. We expect to put on a shirt without thinking about it. There's so many things we do every day that we expect to just work. And it isn't until, like, the shirt's arm is like tucked in such a way I can't get my arm through. I mean, it's simple stuff like that where it starts to really start to show itself of like, hey, I had this expectation that it's not difficult to put a shirt on. You know, and we extend that up further and further into bigger and bigger things. Like, I expect my relationship to be joyous and happy all the time, except it's not today. And why not? You know, and why am I getting upset at my partner because they didn't do what I thought they should be doing, even though I never told them that I wanted them to do it. And I never got their buy-in to do it. And so, you know, you can take it from something very simple to understand the concept, and then you can scale it up to really, really big things. Including, you know, I expect society to work together to solve problems. I mean, that's completely unreasonable. You could just look at the world.
Doesn't go so well,
Yeah. But that's one of the questions that I ask in the flowchart. Is it a reasonable expectation? Mm-hmm. And at this point, asking society as a whole to do one thing is just completely unreasonable because there's always going to be part of the population that wants to do something different. I mean, it's just always going to be the case. There always has and always will be. That's human nature.
So the manageable,
sometimes we have to bring it. Yeah, sometimes we have to bring it back from something really huge back to what can I control? What can I influence?
Right.
What can I change? Because obviously I'm not going to be able to change the masses. So what can I change around me?
Right. Or change myself. Right.
Exactly.
The classic, be the change you wish to see in the world. Right.
Yeah.
And so, but it's interesting because I find that, like, when I was thinking about expectations in, you know, preparation for this call, and when I was reading the book, it's like, well, the first line of thought is often like, well, expectations are bad, right? Mm-hmm. You sort of go to that side quickly. You're like, well, all they seem to do is cause me suffering because they go unmet and then I'm unhappy in mm-hmm. whatever form that unhappiness takes, right? But you can't really live without expectation, because then you'd essentially be incapable of movement or doing anything, because you would just, I mean, I don't know, you would be completely stuck and like helpless in a sense, and that's not very good either. And I mean, even in that, you're not even really escaping the expectations, because in that you're just having expectations that you can't do it, or that you can't do anything, or that you expect that having expectations is going to lead to unmet expectations and unhappiness. So, you know, so long as you're alive, there's no escaping expectations, right? And so really it's about learning how to recognize and manage them and deal with what happens when you have unmet expectations.
To kind of address that, the reason they have a negative connotation is exactly what I was talking about earlier, which is most of the time the expectations we have about everyday life, just they happen. The sun comes up, the sun goes down, we wake up, we go to sleep, we go to the bathroom, like we eat with a fork, we put on our clothes. Like most of the time we don't have to think about the expectations we have as we move through the world. And so we don't see them as positive because we're not recognizing them as expectations as they're happening. The reason we see expectations as negative is because we only recognize them when they become something that's not going met. So we're getting upset. So every time that we recognize that we had this expectation, it's because of those negative moments in time. And so that's kind of why they kind of have that negative connotation. And the people that say, like, I just choose not to have expectations. Well, that's an expectation in and of itself, because now you're expecting not to have expectations. Sorry, you have them. Yeah. Just like you said, they're always going to be there. There's no way to live life without some level of expectations somewhere for something. It's just part of who we are. And so as long as you can accept, like, I have expectations, and, you know, if I can recognize them before they go unmet, I can do something about it to prevent getting upset. But for most of us, the first time that we're going to recognize that we have an expectation is when we get upset. And so for me, I'm like, you know, go ahead, get upset. Just don't stay there. Don't blame others, but use it as a moment in time for growth. Say, oh, I'm upset. I get to learn something right now, and I can fix it so it doesn't happen again, or it doesn't happen as long. Like my example that I always share is with traffic. You know, I'm out in traffic. I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, I would get upset at something that happens right after I leave the house, and I would be upset the entire commute. And now something happens right outside the house, and it's, you know, I'm upset for about 10 seconds, because then I can remind myself it's not reasonable to get upset here. You know, there's too many people on the road. They all have a different take on the rules, and there's no way to have a million conversations and everybody getting on the same page. So I'm able to calm myself down much, much faster. And that's ultimately the point, is that as we move through life, if we're upset less, then we're happy more. It's not that you're ever going to get rid of getting rid of being upset. There's always going to be moments in time that we do. As long as we're growing and moving through life, there's always going to be something new that happens that triggers an expectation we didn't even know we had. But the process of dealing with it becomes much, much faster. And so then we're not upset as long.
Right. And I suppose, yeah, because, you know, life is always changing, right, and evolving. And so stagnant expectations eventually become problematic anyway, for, you know, generally speaking. And so it's not like you can say, I've dealt with all my expectations now, things will be good forever. It's like, yeah, just stick around a little bit, you'll see. That's not going to stay the same, because new expectations come up when you move through different phases in life and you transition into this role, or you start doing that, or, you know, anything new that you're doing, is going to come with a whole lot of new problems and challenges and difficulties. And with all of that comes your expectations of how they should go. And I think that, you know, you quite rightly set it out that it's like, what it's really about is being able to manage what happens when your expectations aren't met, because they aren't, because that's going to happen a lot. Perhaps not every day, maybe every day, maybe multiple times a day. I guess it phases through depending on what's going on. But it's about learning how to just see it for what it is, right? And so perhaps let's go into like the process of like, what happens when you have an unmet expectation? Let's say it's quite a big one, right? So you think that, I'm not sure what's a good example, but it's like, okay, yeah, we'll say like what you had said with your relationship, right? So you're like, oh, okay, so this person's not doing these things that I think that they should be doing, or that the relationship's not going the way I expect it to go or want it to go, right? So what's the process from there in that state of upset to being able to move past it, or to realign, or to, you know, reprogram the situation? Like, what's the best way to do it?
Yeah, so one of the things that I mentioned is that I created a flow chart that deals exactly with this. So you take that moment in time mm-hmm. when you're upset, and the very first question that I ask myself and anyone who's upset at the time is, did you know you had the expectation? Now, 90% of the time, and I'm going to say it's a very high percentage, if it's not 90, but it's very high, we didn't even know we had the expectation until it's gone unmet. And a lot of that can be because, you know, maybe we were raised in such a way, or we saw our parents act in such a way in a relationship, that now that we're in a relationship, we just assume that that's how relationships work, because that's the relationship we saw the most of. And so we have this subconscious thought of how the relationship should be. And so now we're confronted with it not being as we expected. So now we're upset. So the first question is, did you know you had the expectation? Well, if the answer is no, you can almost immediately calm down, because if you didn't even know you had the expectation, there was no way for you to share that expectation. There was no way for the other person to buy into that expectation. There was no conversation about it. Mm-hmm. So it's at that very moment you can say, well, I haven't even shared this expectation because I didn't know about it, so let me take a step back and have a conversation. Now if on the other hand you did know you had the expectation, you know, then you have to kind of ask yourself some other questions, like, have you shared that expectation? Is the expectation reasonable? And you know, the workflow just kind of guides you through this process of asking these very simple questions. And if you haven't shared the expectation, then again, you can't get upset with anybody other than yourself for not having shared that expectation, mm-hmm. which is probably a different expectation. So you'd have to go back to the top and say, you know, do I have an expectation around sharing expectations and them going badly, or, you know, something like that. And that's kind of the process, is you kind of go through this flow chart, you ask the questions. And maybe you have asked the person. Maybe it is reasonable. Maybe they did buy into it, and they're simply not. They're not doing their part. In which case, you kind of have to have that conversation and say, "Hey, you know, we both agreed on this. Like, what's going on?" And most likely, it's some other unknown expectation that's kind of getting in the way. And sometimes those expectations are, I'm going to say, self-sabotaging programs, like. Mm. I'm not good enough, or I'm not lovable, or whatever it might be, that is so subconscious that it just sort of sabotages everything else that you want. And I address that in the book, in that we have a lot of subconscious programming, and its goal is to keep you protected. It's to keep you alive. It's to protect you from the situations that may happen around that sort of situation. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't recognize good, bad, right, or wrong. It's just there to do its job. And so if something comes up that conflicts with it, it's going to fight back. So even if you share an expectation and agree on it, there might be something in your subconscious that will prevent you from really following through on it, mm-hmm. unless you make that super conscious effort to kind of do what you said. So it's a crazy web of thoughts and subconscious thoughts and past, present, future. It's kind of a crazy web to explore.
Definitely. And and it's interesting because I like what you touched on the fact that it's like, well, you know, you might have an expectation and share it with someone, but that's not the only one. And it might not even be the expectation that you think is operating, right? There might be multiple layers underneath that that are either subconscious at the moment, so you don't know that you have those already, and that's just how you're structured, and so you're just assuming that this is how reality is. And in a sense, reality is that way for you in that moment, right? It's not about, like, I mean, you know, I suppose we could talk about whether it's real or not real, but it feels real, let's say. And so you perceive it as such. And so, you know, with an expectation like I'm not good enough, something like that, right? That's so like basic that it'll almost manifest itself in a different expectation of like, I expect people to treat me a certain way, right? Which is the high level of it. And then underneath that, the expectation is, well, I expect that, I mean, it sounds weird to say, like, I expect that I'm not good enough, but, you know, the sort of version is something along those lines, right? And so I think that another point is to be able to, when you're doing this, when one is doing this work, so to speak, of trying to figure out what's going on or whatever, is to also approach it with, you know, compassion towards yourself and not get stuck in different expectations of like how good or successful or whatever it is that you think you should be, right? And it's just a matter of being like, well, oh, I mean, if I didn't know that I had this belief system or this expectation of, you know, how this or that should be, then you don't want to immediately go into like self-reproach of being like, oh, well, this is, I'm a big problem and I have all this shit that's wrong, because you're just, you know, getting stuck in more of it, right? So there definitely is that step. And would you say that that's quite a hard step for some people to approach and manage, is being able to do it with compassion instead of with, you know, vindication or something like that?
Absolutely. So, I mean, the best way I can address it is that this would be considered personal growth. And any personal growth you ever do, at the end of the day, all personal growth is awareness training. It's teaching you how to become aware of the things that are running you that may or may not be serving you. So compassion for yourself is absolutely a big part of that, in that once you recognize, like, I have this pattern or this thought process that keeps me from getting what I want, you don't sit there and bash yourself over the head and say, oh, I'm a horrible person because I think this way. No, because then it's just making it worse. It's recognizing, like, okay, why did I create that program? Like, what happened in my past that served me by creating that program? Did it keep me safe? Did it keep the bullies away? Did it, you know, what did it do to help me back then? Now, it might not be helping me now, but it did at some point. And once you can recognize, like, why it became a thing, and you can understand it, then you can start to change that narrative as life progresses. And it's not the easiest process, and it's not an instant thing. It's not a magic wand sort of situation, but you do have to work on it. And then, you know, the other piece that I wanted to talk about that you brought up was, you know, you can share expectations with people around you, but they also have their own expectations. So just sharing them isn't necessarily enough. It's sharing them, understanding the other person's expectations, and coming to an agreement or negotiating something. Because if you just walk up to somebody and say, all right, I expect you to be at my meeting tomorrow at 10 a.m., bringing coffee and donuts, and you're going to sit in the back row, and you're going to be called on 16 times during the presentation, and I expect you to come up front and then do your thing and then go back, sit down. And, you know, you're kind of like telling them what their life is going to be. And then they're like, nope, I'm not going to be there tomorrow because my kid's got a doctor's appointment. Right. You know, it's like, oh, well, that clearly is not going to work out for either one of them at that point. Right. So, conflicting expectations with sharing it with whoever's around you know, you have to have a conversation. And I, it's one of those things that we just kind of suck at these days is communicating. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many ways to text and email and do these things, but ultimately we suck at communicating as a people nowadays.
Yeah.
Because it's part of communicating is understanding the other person, is making sure that your information is communicated in such a way that they understand you and they communicate in such a way that you understand them, so that you can then come to a common ground. Too often we just want it our way and no other way is even a possibility. You know, we're so used to the instant gratification of so many things that having to have a conversation and come to an agreement with somebody is almost painful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also freeing.
Yeah.
So if you can get past the lack of instant gratification, communicating is just an amazing thing that we've all just sort of gotten away from.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting how what you've said about how, you know, in our world, like, we're able to technically communicate on so many different levels with so many different people, and far more people than anyone in the past could have ever communicated with on a regular basis. But the level of the communication is not very deep, right? And it's very surface level or superficial, and it's not about, you know, finding those common grounds. It's more like going to war, right? And you can see it, like, as what we were talking about in the beginning with, like, on a societal level, when people are like, I think we need to fix the world, and then you're like, oh yeah, but there's 7 billion versions of the world that you think all should align exactly up to one, right? And it's like, that doesn't really work like that, right? And nope. I mean, at the moment, our best system is a voting system and some version of, you know, a democracy where you get to be like, okay, well, how do we make it work for the most amount of people, knowing that some people aren't going to be thrilled about it, but that's just how it goes, right? And then you sort of evolve and you change as you go along. But on a personal level, there definitely often is that limited access of communication. And I wonder why it is. And I guess it's because we have expectations of how it will go, or what's supposed to happen, or whatever, you know, like being, you know, sort of quote unquote vulnerable, let's say, in sharing expectations about this or that, like, that can be a scary thing, because depending on how you view it, right, it's like, well, you're going to be expecting the other person to act in a certain way, right? And this ties back into what you were saying about how it's all programmed from early on, or conditioned in such a way that you interact with the world in a way that's going to, you know, sustain your survival. And so in some sense, it's better to expect, or you think it's better to expect that people will be hostile, because then you can prepare for that ahead of time or whatever, right, to maximize your chance of survival. And that might work in the beginning, but in the long run, it doesn't really work, right? And so that level of that personal communication does certainly take a hit. And doing it is hard, right? And it's often, it doesn't always go well, because people have different ways of doing things, and they might respond to you very defensively, and you're not going to like that, because it might feel like an attack, and then you're like, well, this sucks, I don't want to do this again, right?
Right, and I think that it needs to be addressed, the whole sharing our expectations with those around us. Mm. And because expectations have a negative connotation, we're more afraid to share our expectations with others, because we don't want to upset somebody. We don't want to be, you know, share an expectation about, let's just talk about sex and relationships. People have expectations around that,
mm-hmm.
as they should, you know. But what if you share something that you want sexually in your relationship, and they're not interested? You know, what does that mean? Does that mean the relationship's over? Like, is it a deal breaker? Like, what's going to happen? So we just don't share, because we don't want to mess things up as they already are.
Right.
But at the same time,
the consequences.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what the society that we live in is, that we get so afraid of the bad that's going to happen that we just don't talk anymore. Mm-hmm. We're like, well, things are fine, so let's leave it that way. Let's not try and make them better because it's not going to work, right? But at the same time, what if you share your expectations of things that you want sexually in the relationship that your partner also wants? Now your sexual relationship is that much better. Mm-hmm. So by sharing those expectations, things can get better. They can get worse, they can get better. It's not good or bad. It's just communicating. It's just sharing.
Right.
And what happens with it is what happens with it. And hopefully, if you're with the right person, everything just gets better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ultimately what we want in a relationship with somebody, is to grow and expand that relationship, make it more intimate, better, stronger, and so on. So hopefully if you're listening and you're in a relationship, you actually find it more freeing to share those expectations, to have those conversations and come to an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause if you're in a strong relationship, you can say, yeah, I have this sexual fantasy and I want us to try this. And the other person says, well, I'm not really interested, but thank you for sharing. By the way, we're not like ending our relationship now because you said that. It's just, now I know you're looking for more in the relationship.
Yeah.
Right.
No, it's good. And it's also about, like, you know, managing your, I mean, it's funny, I was going to say managing your expectations, but of how it's going to go when you share your expectations, right? That's a sort of like meta level of it, where it's like, okay, well, I'm going to share this, you know, this fantasy or whatever it is that I have. And, you know, it might go well, it might not. But as you say, it's like, well, if you don't try, nothing's going to happen, right? Now,
exactly.
Our minds do tend to think more about the bad things that could happen. And I think it's more of a survival strategy, because it's like, well, you need a plan for what might happen that's going to be bad for you, right? Or threaten you. And you don't really need a plan so much for the good things that'll happen to you, because they'll be good and they sort of are just more enhancing of your state. And so you don't need to spend so much time thinking about that. Now, I don't think you need to spend much time thinking about all the bad things that could happen to you anyway, from a need perspective. Now, we do tend to do this sometimes. But again, you know, if you're aware of what's happening, sort of consciously aware, that is, it becomes less of a overriding problem or a source of rumination, right? And so instead of being like, well, what if this happens and what if that happens and then this and this and this, and you sort of you make up this whole world of like what if might happen. And it's true that it might happen, but it's just as true that it might not happen and that something great might happen. And I sort of say just as true in the sense of like, well, we don't know what the future holds, right? As much as we try to and we like to, it's like, technically speaking, all that we know is exactly what's this moment, and that's it. The world could end tomorrow.
Yeah, and I can share a couple things on that.
Yeah, go for it.
You know, like, so media, TV, movies, all that stuff. Why are all of them basically pointing out the worst case scenario? Because it's entertaining.
Yes, captures your attention.
If you actually, if you had two people walk into a room and there wasn't conflict or drama, and they actually talked and came to a conclusion, the movie would last for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But there's got to be a misunderstanding, and then they've got to go through all these hoops and jumps, and, you know, 2 hours later, they finally figure out that they could have solved this, you know, 2 years ago in a 5 minute conversation.
Yeah.
So as society goes, we've kind of learned the worst case scenario is going to happen because that's all we see. And that's because that's what's entertaining. That's what prolongs the story, prolongs the plot. Personally, I grew up with, so my mom kind of brought her mom and generations, etc., into the family thought process, which is, what bad can happen is what's going to happen. It's like every worst case scenario possible comes in before the good that will come from that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like learning to ride a bike. You know, the good thing about learning to ride a bike is you get to ride a bike and you get to get some exercise and you get to see the world in a different way. unfortunately, growing up, it was like, oh, you're gonna fall, you're gonna scratch yourself, you're gonna run into a car, somebody's gonna run into you, like death, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's no good about riding a bicycle because everything bad that's gonna happen. Now, growing up with that, I've had a lot of time and effort in unlearning those thought processes and only looking at the good that could come out of whatever it is that I'm planning on doing, rather than thinking of every bad scenario. Because guess what? I'm guessing 99.999% of the time I've been wrong about what's going to happen. So luckily, not only was I programmed with all the bad that can happen, I was also programmed that none of it ever happens.
Right.
So, 'cause there are some people who are basically doom and gloom and everything bad is going to happen, and it does, because that's how they were raised. Mm-hmm. They saw the bad and it actually came to fruition. So I was lucky to get both of those programs that sort of offset each other. You know, it's in the dating world or relationship world, however you put it, you send a text message to somebody and they don't respond. Like, you're going back and forth and back and forth, and then you send one message and then you don't hear from them, right? So you're like coming up with every reason why they're no longer texting back.
Yeah.
And never once, in every time that's ever happened, have I been right about why they haven't texted back right then and there.
Yeah.
It's like we were going back and forth, and then all of a sudden, they're not. You know, they've been texting as they're walking into a room where a play is about to start, and they just, like, they send a text and turn it off.
Yeah.
So they don't see my last text, right? Or, you know, they dropped the phone, and it smashed into a billion pieces, and they had to, like, go get a new phone. Like, things happen.
Yeah.
There's reasons people do not text back. You know, maybe you're, you know, so many things can happen while you're texting. You could be walking somewhere, you have to turn it off right after you send a message or whatever it might be. So I've never once been right about why somebody hasn't texted back. So I've stopped making those excuses.
Yeah.
As to why. I've just sort of, like, sent my message and I go on with my day. And if they text back, great. If they don't, whatever. Yeah. I can move on with life, you know, that sort of thing. So worrying about the future, worrying about what's going to happen, that's never, ever, in my experience, ever something that should be thought about. It's like, maybe let's focus on what good can happen in sharing, in those communication moments in time. So
right. No, you absolutely. And you know, worrying basically makes you relive the situation at least once, and then again if it actually happens. But so you're going through it, you're definitely going through it emotionally now, and then if it turns out that you were correct, then you're going to go through it again. And so the first one was useless and just extra anyway. So it's like, well, if you're going to have shit to deal with, just let the shit come at the time, and then you'll deal with it, and then that will be the end of it, right? But to sort of go through it again and again and again in preparation for the actual bad thing, so-called bad thing that happens to you, it doesn't help. It just leads you to lots of suffering. And yeah, I mean, it's not something that you can just switch off, but or change immediately, right? But it's part of this activity of growth and being able to, you know, like, be aware of when these thoughts are coming up and say, okay, you know, it's fine. I recognize why this thought is here, and then just sort of allowing it to be and to pass by and to not take it so seriously. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's the spiritual teacher Eckhart Tolle, he talks about, I mean, he talks about a lot of things, but one of the things he talks about is the power of not knowing, right? And being able to be comfortable in the space of not knowing why things are happening or how they should be happening. And in one sense, it's a releasing of expectations, right? Just to sort of, mm-hmm, like, bring it back to our theme, in that it's being able to say, you know, realistically, most of things that happen in life are so far out of our control, it's not even close, right? There's such a small amount of things that we can control, and, you know, we get all tied up and upset about all the things that we can't control as if we should or could control them, right? And so it's amazingly refreshing to embrace, like, that attitude, like what you were saying, you know, when someone doesn't text you back, to be able to be like, okay, they didn't text me back, I don't know why, It could be a million things. I'm not going to worry about it. Or, you know, if my worrying thoughts come up, I'm not going to give them much attention, right? Because that's really, I guess, where it comes down to. You can't just shut those thoughts down. If they want to come up, they'll come up. But you can just be like, fine, whatever. It could be anything, right? They, you know, they could have died or they could be ghosting me. And if they are, whatever, right? Like, that's fine because I don't get to control these things. All I get to control really is how I respond to it in that particular moment. And it could be good and it could be bad and it could generally just be a million different things. And there's no reason to think that it is the bad way rather than the good way or the neutral way. That's just your mind just making it up for you, right? And seeing and planning the worst. And it's good to understand why that happens, because then you can be, you know, compassionate with yourself and just be like, all right, well, this is what I was thinking at the time. I'm, you know, going to revisit that or do something different or try something else. And it is a scary process a lot of the time too, because that state of not knowing is uncomfortable for the mind a lot of the time, because not knowing in some sense from a, you know, mental projection perspective is potentially very dangerous because you're not planning for all the terrible things that might happen to you. But in reality, it's actually fine because these terrible things don't happen all the time to you, right? And you can manage them when they do. I mean, that's the other part of it.
Yeah, and Eckhart Tolle's Power of Now is very, very huge. So we live in a weird world where people are like, plan ahead, set goals, think about the future, but also just live in the now.
Yeah.
And it's like the mixed messages there, if you're not paying attention to the nuances of each of those things, it's a pain because then you're like, this scenario is happening, so I should be thinking about what might happen as a result of it. But for a lot of those things, it's the doom and gloom, the bad things that are going to happen. Whereas goal setting is more like, these are the positive things I want to have happen in the future. And it can get tricky when you're not paying attention to, you know, what am I thinking about right now? Am I thinking about a goal and a positive thing in the future? Mm-hmm. Or am I thinking about, you know, the doom and gloom? And I think to your point, all we can do is control ourselves and our own responses. So a goal in the future should never really involve another person unless you're setting a joint goal together. Because if you're like, I'm going to marry Susan in 5 years, well, do you have Susan's buy-in for that goal? Like, or is it going to be a different Susan that you don't know about?
Right.
Like you're just setting a goal to marry somebody named Susan.
That's an interesting goal. But if it's like, have.
Right? I'm going to, you know, see how that comes.
Find a
out.
List of all the Susans and tick them off one at a time. Be like, nope, that was the wrong one.
That was not the right Susan. But you know, if you're setting a goal of like, I'm going to be in a healthy, long-term relationship in 5 years, those are things, you know, to some extent you can control that, and that you're going to go out and date, you're going to meet people, you're going to figure out for yourself what a healthy relationship is. And you're going to take those steps that you can control to get into that relationship. Mm-hmm. And maybe in 5 years, you're actually in a healthy long-term relationship.
Well, maybe you've learned a bunch about it anyway, and you can readjust your sights of what it means to you, right? So it's all good
anyway.
Maybe
you're just super, super clear after 5 years of what a healthy relationship is. But, you know, all you can say is like, all you can do is set a goal that controls yourself and your sphere of influence. But when you're, you know, communicating with somebody else, to your point, and you can't control their side of the equation, that's their control. So if they're not texting you back, that's because of whatever they're doing or thinking about or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. So all you can do is say, well, I'm just going to be here and now and present, and I'm going to continue doing what I was doing. So maybe I'm working on a project, maybe I'm doing work. If they text back today, great. Otherwise, you know, maybe I was supposed to have plans with somebody and they haven't texted back, so now maybe I get to watch that movie I've always wanted to watch that I haven't had time for. You know, you can kind of change things. And then, you know, if they do text back at last minute, you can say, all right, well, that's cool, but I kind of need to now have that conversation of, I like to plan ahead. You know, I don't want to do last minute decisions unless we agree that I won't know if you're ready or able to do something until the last minute. Then I'm expecting that I'll hear at the last minute whether something's going to happen or not.
Right.
But there was a prior communication around that. So yeah, all you have is the control over yourself, and the same thing with expectations going unmet. When you're upset, all you can do is control your own thoughts, feelings, and emotions around that unmet expectation. Mm-hmm. And you can have that conversation with yourself first and then decide if you need to bring in somebody else into that conversation. So.
Right. And it's also true that, like, our interpretation of how things are going at the moment doesn't take much into account that we don't know, which is mostly everything. And so the situation that you're interpreting as having gone badly because it didn't meet your expectations might actually turn out to be a good thing for you in the long run. You just haven't got there yet. You couldn't possibly plan or know about, because, I mean, I don't know, the world works in mysterious ways, I suppose you could say. But, you know, like, perhaps, you know, your girlfriend or whatever it is of a long term dumps you and it crushes you and it sucks and, you know, you're miserable and it's all these bad things. But then, and you think that the world is against you and that whatever, right? But then, you know, sometime later, because that happened, you meet someone else who you end up, you know, marrying or whatever it is. And, well, this good thing couldn't have happened if that bad thing didn't, because otherwise you'd still be there. Or, I mean, that's a sort of bigger example, but on a smaller example, it's like, oh, well, they didn't text you back. So, yeah, you get to make these plans with a friend you hadn't seen in a few weeks that you otherwise wouldn't have done. And then maybe they text you back the next day for plans anyway, and then you get both of them. But if you had sort of spun out into a spiral of like, oh, this person never does this or doesn't text me, or, you know, some whole big story that you can concoct in your head, I mean, that can just ruin everything for everyone. And that's not helpful for anyone anyway, right? So it really is about just being able to manage what your expectations of yourself and of life are, and to do so in a very kind and compassionate way towards yourself and others, being like, I don't know really what's going on, you know? I'm just trying my best, and you're trying your best, and we're seeing how we can navigate it together and where we can, you know, bring good to ourselves and to each other's lives, and then just see where it goes, right? And so in that sense, mm-hmm. I guess there is some expectation, but also no expectations, you know?
It's a little weird.
Yeah, it's a little paradoxical about being like, well, I'm going to have some expectations. So I guess it's like, I have some expectations, but I'm okay with them changing, right?
Yeah, and I think it's more that at that point, you're kind of setting the expectation of yourself to just be calm and be open. So now you're just expecting yourself to be open and ready for whatever comes.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed with this practice of being aware of the expectations and exploring them, looking at our past, you know, at the relationships that failed to bring us to a relationship that didn't, or whatever it might be, you know, we can always look back and see what things happened to get us to where we are today. You know, that's why hindsight is 20/20.
Yeah.
That saying is like, you can easily see how you got to where you are today. And, you know, people are like, you know, would you go back and change anything in your past? I'm like, well, I wouldn't be who I am today if I went back and changed something in my past. Would I be better? Maybe. Would it be worse? I don't know.
Could be. Yeah.
Would I be as fulfilled? I mean, we don't know, plain and simple. But it's fun because I'm starting to see it more in its present state. Like, if I look back in the past, I can see how things were to get me to where I am today. But now I'm starting to see things that are happening today and where they might lead me in the future. Now, I'm not sitting there saying, like, my expectation is I'm going to be this in the future. It's like, I can see where there's a couple paths of where I might end up in the future, be based on what's happening right now.
Right.
And it's kind of fun because with personal growth, with awareness training, that's the type of thing that can happen, is you can start to see the pieces of the puzzle getting put down in front of you a little more clearly than if you weren't paying attention.
Right.
And it's kind of fun that way. So,
yeah, brings a sense of adventure to life.
It does. Know? It's like, ooh, this is kind of happening.
Yeah. And,
okay, what can I do to help it move a little faster or whatever, you know?
Right. And if you're not, like, you know, sufficiently present, I guess you could say, for it, you know, you could be lost in your head thinking about the past or the future problems or, you know, misfortunes or whatever it is, and then you're missing out on what's happening now, and you're missing the things that you could do to help push it along or to help yourself or to feel better, or, you know, all these opportunities that life presents. You have to be open and aware of them to be able to take them, right? Otherwise they just pass you by, and then you're still stuck or doing the same thing that you were doing, because you're just sort of lost in your head, which, you know, I mean, happens to people, myself included, like all the time. I mean, that's just how it is. But through this personal development or self-growth practice, like, that stuff can start to change, and your sense of life and adventure and what's coming, that changes too, because you can start to live it more positively and with more growth and with an attitude of openness and being able to welcome life rather than resist everything, right? And not resist all the changes and do that. It's like, okay, let's see where this goes, or this is exciting, and, you know, it might not work, but it might work, and who knows, right? And so being able to do that. And also, you know, I think we touched on in the beginning about that, like, self-fulfilling prophecy idea of, like, well, how do you see things work? Do you see things working for you or against you? And depending on what way you approach a situation will also depend on how you respond to the situation, right? How does that...
And it's, and it's usually subconscious in nature. Yeah. So until you become aware of that program that's running you as to whether things work out for you or not, you know, if you're always unhappy and never getting what you want, then it might be that you have a program running that says you never get what you want. And now you have to work that much harder to switch that around.
And it's not that, you know, in that situation, it's not that people don't face real difficulty and hardship. And I mean, listen, people live in war-torn countries and in dire poverty and all sorts of terrible things, right? So those are a bit more of the extreme cases, I suppose. But in the sort of, like, just general day-to-day life, it's like, yeah, you know, are you going to interpret everything that happens as something that works against you or is working for you, right? And as we were saying, like, a lot of the things that are good for you are difficult anyway. Growth doesn't come through living in your comfort zone. It comes through challenge and adversity. And that's how evolution works anyway, right? And so you get to be able to recognize that this is how you see things, and you can start to change it at that level of being able to say, oh, well, you know, this difficulty has come up, but actually I'm going to see it as an opportunity for growth or for development for myself or for other people. And that that totally transforms the whole situation. You still have to deal with it, and it's still difficult. It's not that it becomes easy or it goes away, but the way that it affects you changes, and then the way that you feel about it changes too, right? And so in that sense, it is a sense of, like, reprogramming or reconditioning or something along those lines. And I think that, you know,
And along that, that's where I tell people, I'm like, go ahead and get upset. Because I know society is saying, like, chill out, be calm, don't get upset.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm on the other side of that of, like, go ahead. That's a great moment in time to recognize an opportunity for growth.
Right.
The problem is when somebody gets upset and they stay there for years and years and years, or they blame everybody else. But if you take that moment in time of being upset and actually say, like, hey, I have an opportunity to explore my mind, to explore my thoughts, to figure out why I'm feeling this way and to why this happened, so that next time it doesn't last a day, it lasts an hour. And then the time after that, it lasts 10 minutes. And then it lasts a minute. And then it lasts a second. You know, it's not that you're going to recognize these moments in time and getting upset and you're going to solve it and boom, it's over and yay, happy days. Yeah. It's to recognize it before it happens again, or to keep it from happening for a further amount of time. Mm-hmm. And it's a practice. And that's what, I mean, people want the magic bullet, the magic wand to just solve their problems. But unfortunately, it's a practice. You have to do it on a regular basis for anything to change.
Yeah. So. And also, it's hard because, well, it can be hard, I suppose, because it's very unpleasant and uncomfortable to have to face certain realities about yourself and how you see things, right? And we don't want to do it because it often comes with all sorts of unpleasant emotions and thoughts about ourselves and others. And, you know, to sort of sit with it consciously to recognize what it is can also be painful because you're basically, you have to validate certain things or notice or become aware of certain things that are going on inside you or as you or however you want to say it. And it's not particularly fun to do that, right? And particularly if you have been avoiding it for a long time, that amps up the anxiety about it as well. And, you know, the fear of all of it really comes in. And so, you know, to work through it is a process, right? It is the practice. And it is about being able to do it every time so that in the future, it becomes less and less time of having to do that. And then eventually you get to a point where you can stop it from happening altogether almost, right? But there is no magic bullet for it. It would be nice.
It would be nice.
I mean, you know, it would be nice to just be like, oh, you know, just pop this pill or whatever it is and everything will be good forever. And it's like, well, I mean, sure, but that doesn't really exist or work, right? And so, you know, and you can't do it just like with everything in life. I mean, if you were like, I want to run a triathlon or I want to do a triathlon or something like that, running's part of it. You can't just be like, all right, I'm going to train for today and then I'll run it tomorrow. It's like, yeah, I mean, you could. Is it going to work? Probably not. You're probably going to hurt yourself and, you know, not finish. You could try, but really it's going to take 6 months or a year of training to get to that point where you can do this extraordinary thing. But when you get to that point, it'll feel great, right? And it'll feel like a massive accomplishment that you've worked so hard for. And at each step of the way, when you get to see those little moments of progress and be like, oh, well, you know, 2 months ago, I could only run like 1 kilometer before I was dying. And, you know, now it's been 2 months and I can do 5. And that's a significant improvement. And it's not 10 or 20 or 50, but it's like, yeah, but just give yourself a chance, you know? Like, you have this shit takes time, and you just got to be able to take it one moment or one day at a time, right? And it really does come down to that.
And with the whole the discussion on compassion, you have to also understand, if you grew up a certain way, maybe you grew up in a impoverished household and there wasn't a lot of money around. So the thought, the subconscious thought is that I just don't have money. You know, if you grew up in a household for 18 years with the thought process of I don't have money, you're not going to change the I don't have money program in 18 days.
Yeah.
And it's not going to take you 18 years to solve it either, but you have to understand you have an 18-year program running. And every day that you're not practicing a different thought, you know, it's still there.
Yeah.
So you have to practice a new thought of like, I do have money. I am able to save money. I am able to buy what I want. I am making more money than my parents did when I was a kid, et cetera, et cetera. Whatever those thought processes are to change that past program, it's going to take time to put that new program into place.
Yeah.
The old program's never going away. It might get really quiet and sit in a corner and kind of look up every now and then. But as long as you're building that new program of like, I'm wealthy, I have money, I can do things, that I wasn't able to do when I was a kid and my parents weren't able to provide when I was a kid, but I am able to because of what the choices I've made, you know, that program gets stronger. And ultimately, the longer you do that, the louder it gets and the quieter the other one gets.
Yeah.
And then eventually you don't even have to think about it. Like for me, my big one was self-confidence. Like I've got some little dude sitting in the corner who's saying like, I suck as a human being and nobody likes me and I'm not fun and blah, blah, you know, all those horrible, I don't even know what they say anymore because I don't pay attention to it.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who listens to one of these or sees me doing improv or something else, and I tell them, like, back in high school and college and even after college a little bit, I had no self-confidence, to be like, really? You're like the most confident person we know. Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, I've worked really hard to get there. And yeah, every now and then it creeps up and says, really, Ben, are you?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, I am. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And so, you know, I will have to work on that the rest of my life. But the more that I work on it, kind of the less that I have to work on it.
Yeah.
I still have to work on it. It's just not going to be as big of an effort. So whenever you're trying to change something from your past, it's going to take a lot more upfront effort than you can possibly imagine. You know, if you're training for a triathlon, it's going to take you a lot of effort to get up and push yourself out the door to go run, to swim, to ride your bike, if you're not used to doing those mm-hmm. things. Now, if you do it for 2 months, in 2 months, it's just going to be habit and you're just going to go do it. And that's kind of the whole process, is the more you practice something, the easier it gets as time goes on.
Right. And yeah, you're building those new pathways in your brain, right? And it does take time. Mm-hmm. And as you do it, the better you get at it and the deeper you can go into the various formations of it. And, you know, you can sort of, if you just start running and you've never been a runner, I mean, really, you don't know how to run. Right. I mean, you know how to run, sort of, like, but in terms of how to run a marathon, you just don't, because you've never done it. I mean, perhaps you've read books and you know conceptually how to do it, but that's not the same as actually getting on the street and running and being like, how are my feet placed? And, you know, how quickly can I increase or decrease the strides or whatever it is, right? It's like, and your lungs have to adjust to this new way of breathing and of, you know, managing your heartbeat over time. And it's not easy. And the more you do it, the better you get at it. And the more you can make slight adjustments and learn these little tricks that can improve over time. But you have to do it and you have to just keep doing it and keep going. And, you know, eventually you do get there and go through the injuries and the pain and all that shit. And it's the same thing with expectations, right? It's like, yeah, it's going to suck doing it for a while, but eventually you get better at it and you're able to just be like, okay, something else I got to do now, you know? Oh, or let me try this little trick. Or what if I take a deep breath before I respond to people talking? Or what if there's all sorts of little tricks that you can learn once you get into it, right? And it's awesome. And as you say, it's a wonderful adventure to be living and to be engaging in this journey of growth and opportunity and freedom, ultimately. But yeah, listen, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I mean, you know, we're already over an hour and I really appreciate you coming on today. So thank you very much. Is there anything that you'd like to promote? I'll put links and stuff in the description, of course, but just so people know, you know, where can they find you if they want to hear more about it?
Yeah, I just tell people to go to my website, which is havingexpectations.com. And the flowchart that I was talking about this whole time, you can download that for free, put it up on your fridge. You can find links to the book and all that fun stuff in there. So, yeah, havingexpectations.com.
Yeah, and I would recommend the book. It's great. It's an easy read. You know, it's very well written. So thank you very much again.
Thank you.
And hopefully you'll come on again soon and we'll get to chat more.
Yeah, I'm taking my hand. It's writing a fictional novel at this point, so might come back for that.
Oh, hell yeah. That's awesome. All right, thanks, Ben. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care.